3500 studenten uit meer dan 100 verschillende landen volgen bij de University College of Estate Management een online opleiding. Hoe? Daar kan de volgende gast alles over vertellen. Professional Meet Student, met als gast CEO Ashley Wheaton.
Presentatie door Bob Brinkman en Roos van Amstel.
Ashley, if I'm right, then that you think there's something wrong with the way we work online right now, is it?
I think the online provision of education has a long way to go. I think some of what we're doing is good, but I don't think we're adopting technology fast enough. And I think in some ways we are too embedded in the historical way that we've done things. I think most importantly for me is the notion of assessment. I really think assessment is still conducted largely through an examination model. And that's a model that's probably 200 or 300 years old now. And I can't think of anything else that we do that is that old that we still live with. Maybe breathing in and out would be one thing. But, you know, if you imagine galloping down the motorway on a horse while the cars are speeding past you, I think, you know, that's not the wrong way to think about assessment being carried out through exams.
But why is it still there, and why doesn't it develop?
I think there's one good reason why it still persists, and that's because we are really scared of cheating. You know, we're really scared that if we find a different model, students will find a way to inform other students of what the questions are. And I think the sooner we find a way to overcome that fear, the better. I think there are other good reasons, mostly because it gives us a comparison. You know, it's what we've always done, so we're comfortable in using that model because we know how it used to work.
So isn't it a good fear? Is the fear legit?
I certainly think it's a fear that we shouldn't dismiss. We don't want to encourage cheating, right? We want it to be a fair system. But I think if you look at exams, the reason we do it is to stop students from having early sight of questions, right? And I suppose we have to challenge that notion. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with a student being able to show off and being able to tell us what they really know, rather than just there being some luck involved in the questions being exactly the ones that they really studied for? I think we have to, you know, really think about encouraging students to show everything they know, not just show the narrow window of knowledge that an exam might ask of them.
Basically, since you started talking now, I've been trying to imagine a new way of assessment online that's not examination.
Yeah.
But actually, I couldn't really come up with anything. So what is a new way of online assessment? Could you give an example?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we think there are lots of ways of doing that. In fact, I think that there is the slightly harder way of assessing using inevitably multiple choice questions or using a question bank where there are structured answers, but of course you have to have a large volume of those to make sure that a student gets a fair representative sample. But they can be smart. There are lots of ways of using branching technologies that allow you to dig into areas of students' knowledge where they don't answer a particular question correctly. So I think using smart multiple choice questions is one. But I think at the other end of the scale is the opportunity to be really open in the questions that we ask. So instead of being very narrow and asking a single prescriptive question, thinking about formative assessment, saying perhaps in week 4 of your studies, say, send us a video on the things that you've learned so far. And so really being open in what you're asking and giving the opportunity to a student to show off what they've learned and to be really expansive.
Yeah, because to me, the easiest thing, and that's, I mean, the video is already a little bit a different kind of form, because a lot is, before that was knowledge-based. Yeah. You're testing the kind of knowledge that students have. But of course, you also want to test different skills. You want to know how they work together. You want to know how they're, all these kind of things.
Yeah.
How do you do that? So videos is a way to do that, to test that, assess that?
Yeah, I think that's one technology, but I think that there are all sorts of ways of having assessment be part of the study. I think that's really critical. So it's not just learn, then take an assessment. I think if assessment becomes a more engaging part of your journey, and that can be peer-to-peer assessment, peer-to-tutor assessment, group assessment, all sorts of activities that would allow you to demonstrate that you are learning what you need to learn, but not through what we might recognise as a really formal assessment process.
How do you keep students online motivated in an online education? There's Facebook, there's YouTube, there's Netflix, there's all these kinds of things that I think are far more interesting sometimes than online education. How do you work with that? With all those other
distractions.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm not sure that the distractions are any worse than if you're studying on a campus. I think there are all sorts of other distractions that come from being on a campus-based university. I think there's a couple of ways we need to think about this. The first thing, of course, is we're fortunate. We are a vocational university, so most of our students come with a predetermined goal. They know that they want to gain a professional qualification, typically so they can gain entry to the profession. So they come with a certain degree of motivation already.
It's an inner goal.
Exactly. So maybe we have a head start. But actually then I think it's about making sure that the programmes are really well structured, that our pedagogy is suitable for online learning, that we provide a mechanism by which students understand what is in front of them so they can plan their time, they know when they can study, and then we provide lots of different modes of learning within that. And of course, each student will pick their own path. We do a lot of work with learning analytics, so we're starting to understand what works and what doesn't. What we've learned so far is it's different for everybody. You know, inevitably, some students don't want to engage at all. They just want to self-study, sit quietly, not on the forums, not engage with the webinars or any other technologies, and they pass their exams. Others are really active and want that engagement. So it really depends on an individual student basis.
All right, so we've got structure, we've got assessment. So then I'm really curious about the supervising of the whole process. How do you supervise these students in an online environment?
Yeah, so it's actually a really good question. And we do that today in a couple of ways. But we have a very rigid model of tutors to student ratio. And what we don't say is, you know, you're online, you get the same tutor. So every time we have more than 45 students on a particular module, we add another tutor. So we keep that ratio really small so that we can make sure that the tutor has time to interact both with the group and with individuals if they want to. That does bring some challenges, by the way. So we have a shared content model across our programmes. So each module can plug and play into other programmes. So I'll give you an example. Our law module last year had 770 students studying on one module. So with that, we would have 14 tutors teaching groups of 45 students each time, which is great for the students, but the challenge it brings is trying to maintain a consistency across. So regardless of which tutor group you are in, you still get an experience which is reasonable and fair and consistent with everybody else. That's
got
not
it.
Easy.
Yeah, got it. Okay, to me, but you know, I'm used to offline learning, of course. So to me, one supervisor for 45 people already seems a lot of people for one person. Then again, I guess that's very different because it's online. But still, to properly supervise, it seems kind of hard. 45 people, it's a lot.
Yeah. If you put that in a classroom, the classroom is full.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, you know, one of the advantages we have, of course, is that the interactions are a real mix across that. So we don't necessarily have all 45 students all asking for, you know, attention at one point in time. And a lot of that is moderated in the forums online as well. So the students are often discussing that between themselves as well as between the tutor and the student. So in many ways, the tutor's role is as much about facilitation of a discussion as it is about really being the active teacher or tutor of that particular program. And of course, in theory, all of our modules are structured in a way that if you wanted to as a student, you could just take the self-study route. So it's an extra layer, if you like, rather than a necessary layer.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Thanks.
Before this interview started, you just told us about the 118 countries.
Yeah.
The University College of Estate. What's so funny? You're laughing.
No. I'm just listening with interest.
118 countries does the University College of Estate Management have students on? How do you deal with all the culture differences that come with that fact?
I suppose the short answer is I'm not sure that we do. what we do is we say we have a program that we believe is suitable for many markets, and I think that's really important, right? We have one program, and if you are in a geographical market where you think that program is suitable for you, we would really welcome you onto that program. What we don't do, and I think this is an important aspect of the way we do it, is provide any degree of localization or local content into that program. It would be an impossibility, and then you start to run the risk of the program being better for some students than for others. But bear in mind, of course, 60% of our students are in the United Kingdom. So that core market of 60% is really what drives our programs. So if you think about them as UK-based programs that some international students think are attractive, then that's probably a better way to consider them. So we're not building programs specifically for the Cayman Islands or Nigeria or other countries.
What do you learn still today with this online education?
I think I'm learning more about the challenges that we need to overcome than I am learning about particular solutions. That might sound a bit strange, but I think the more I look at it, the more I realise how far away higher education is from where it needs to be. My view is that some higher education institutions are going to die very quickly unless they really adopt these new techniques. The old model, it worked for a while, but it's beginning not to work. And the risk is that somebody that understands this stuff much better than higher education comes in and changes it.
But why is it not working anymore, the old model? What happened?
I think students are becoming more discerning. I think they're becoming more demanding, and I think they want a different way of learning. I give you a very good example of how that's being driven in the UK by the government agenda.
Yes, question sure. First. Just what for you is the old system?
So the old system is you go to a campus-based university, you enroll in a degree program which is nothing to do with the work that you're going to do. You party for 3 years, and at the end of three years you sit in an exam hall and you hope that you're able to answer the questions that come up on that paper on that day. That's being a bit harsh, but I think the model hasn't moved a lot from that.
But you're party, so that's good.
Yeah. I said this earlier on, I think that is good. I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that the social dimension of being on a campus-based university is a really important part. I think it's okay. I think we should celebrate that. We shouldn't try to hide it, but we should also recognise that it's not all about academic study for some students.
But of course, there's more to the social environment than just partying. I mean, being in a classroom together and studying together, in like physically together,
of course,
also is important.
Of course, and I think what's wrong with the old model in that regard is that the social environment that you are in and the network that you create is very narrow. Right, it's accidental. It's people you happen to meet, and it's the people who happen to be within physical proximity of your program of study, your hall of residence, the lectures you go to, maybe the clubs or societies that you join. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, where I think technology really needs to play a much bigger part, even in campus-based universities, is connecting you to many more people than that, and people of real relevance. You know, people who are studying on your program, but maybe in another university, or people from industry, or mentors, or alumni who studied on the program a few years ago. That wider network is so much richer and so much more valuable than the five people that you met the first day of your course of study.
But what has to What has to happen? What has to before you have your goal, your personal goal with this? Is it a long way? What has to
Yeah, I think it is a long way, but I think what has to happen is we have to find a way for students to choose their path everywhere in their course of studies. And I think what we do is we allow a lot of flexibility in our study, but we still don't allow full flexibility. And that largely for me is around this assessment model. It's around finding a way for assessment to be available to you as a student when you want it, not when the institution says, okay, you can do it today. Because that's so much more personal to the student, isn't it? I can choose to do my assessment when I feel I'm ready. And if that's early or late, it doesn't matter. Why would it matter to me as an institution?
But doesn't have to be there a frame to work in it.
Yeah, I think there does have to be a framework, but I think we can push the boundaries a lot harder than we do today. You know, think about the rigidity of a model that says you will be examined at 2 p.m. on Wednesday the 17th for 3 hours. That's it. I mean, that's as inflexible and unpersonal as you can possibly make it. We need to say to people that assessment is available for you between Monday the 1st and Friday the 29th. You get 4 weeks and you can pick and choose when you decide that you're ready. Mm. If you're ready early, take the assessment and take the rest of the time to do other things. You know, we don't live in a world anymore, do we, where everyone's got the luxury of all this time just to do study, and particularly for our students, of course, who are 98% of them are in work, right? They're in full-time employment. So it's quite possible for them that they will have conflicts in their schedule that means the moment we might choose for an exam doesn't fit easily within their schedule.
I have two questions. The first one is, you said earlier already that the students that follow your program are all really motivated, right? But I'm thinking, if I listen to you, this should be part of the whole school system, right? Yeah. The whole school system should be changed. How are you going to do that with the people who are not so motivated, maybe? Can they handle that kind of flexibility?
I mean, the short answer is I don't know if they can handle it, but I think we have to make it available, don't we? And maybe the point here is that if you want the old model, it's still preserved in what we're doing, isn't it? It doesn't go away entirely. What we're saying is that old model that you, if you want, you can have exists. But outside of that, there are new ways that you can think about this. You know, we're seeing an increasing number of students who don't even want to go to university. They just want to stay at home and study. So already we're seeing that students want this to be different. Employers and industry definitely want this to be different. So somewhere in the middle, we just have to find the institutions that are brave enough to offer new ways of studying and new ways of being assessed.
Yeah, I'm really wondering what would happen if we just would throw out the whole system and just go with this new idea. Because I'm also wondering, maybe that would actually create motivation with people that don't have it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example of what might really motivate somebody. And I don't know that this would ever happen, but mm-hmm. sometimes extreme examples give us, you know, hope, right? why not get a degree in a weekend, right? If you are motivated, right, and you are prepared to learn everything that you need to learn, and you are prepared to spend a whole weekend sitting, let's say, 19 three-hour assessments, back to back, through the night, through the day, the whole just you do them all, and you can pass them. Why wouldn't I award you that degree? You've demonstrated that you've learned everything.
You can get your car license in 10 hours.
There you go.
Yeah. So why not?
Yeah, you know, there are lots of good examples out there of other things that we're used to compressing and we want to do them quickly, and yet this is the one thing that we say, no. You have to take 3 years to do this, please.
So basically what we want is we want it to be possible for every single student to pick what for there is like the nicest way to learn.
Exactly.
And do it in their own way.
Do it in their own way. Yeah. And if that's 3 years, that's fine, by the way. We're not taking that away from them, are we? We're saying if you want to do it faster or slower, that's all good.
Wow, it's going to be quite hard to structure this whole thing if you really want to give every single person that kind of freedom.
It is, but you know, that's where you have to rely on the technology. Because if you rely on the old models, you can't run an assessment model where you have to wait for everybody to finish before you can moderate and mark and all those things. So you have to rely on computer-based, you know, marking and technological ways of solving that problem for you.
So how does the future classroom... So, nothing here. So how does the future classroom looks like for you? Is there a classroom in the future?
Yeah, it's a good question, because actually I think the answer is not what we all want it to be, right? The easy answer is to say it looks like a virtual classroom, right? It's real time, it's synchronous, there's a tutor in there somehow through video or through some sort of avatar, and you participate in that classroom just like you would in a campus. I don't think it looks like that at all. We have a very low take-up of students who participate in our synchronous webinars. We try really hard. We run like 900 of them a year. And we have about 17% of students who participate. So actually, I think the classroom looks more like dip in, dip out, choose the things that are right for you. Sometimes that might be synchronous, but more it's asynchronous, and it's about saying, I have a question, or I want this, and then you find a way to have it, but not in real time. So I think that will go away. I think we start to see more of a sort of a series of video or podcast lectures, which look like they're being delivered in real time, but in fact have already been recorded or have come from a bank of lectures, you know, that already exist.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't find it surprising, actually, because if you try to use technology to kind of virtually make a situation that we're already used to, well, basically, we are realizing that we're trying to get away from that situation, it seems kind of makes sense that it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's exactly the point. You know, we need to stop trying to use the technology to replicate the way
exactly.
we do it and use the technology to do what it's good at, which usually is something different,
Yeah, okay, I have one more
question
I really want to ask. It's how it's now, if you look at the program you have now, and you talk about personalized learnings, and that, since that's kind of what we're talking about today, all the day, I'm really wondering, there's definitely some people for who it's really important to have, you know, physical contact with other people, to be having real conversation with real people.
Sure.
How do you help them with their needs? If you have just an online environment, do you even, or is that just a part you cannot?
We send them to another institution.
Yeah.
I mean, your question is a really important one, because flexible and personal doesn't have to mean online, right? That's a really important point.
Yeah.
It's about using technology to allow it to be more personal, allow it to be more flexible for each student. But that can still be happening inside a campus. That doesn't have to happen just exclusively in online institutions. You know, it's about marrying those two. I think the real challenge is that for most campus-based universities, the technology always seems to be an afterthought, something that they're trying or that they're just adding to the program rather than using it as part of the program. So I think the sooner we start to see that, the better. And then, of course, students can pick what's right for them. Not everybody wants the same thing. That's the whole point about personalization, right? You know, you have choice and you pick the thing that works best for you.
Got it.
Okay.
Ashley Wheaton, thank you very much.
You're welcome.